Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today we're welcoming back a multi-award winning and highly respected filmmaker who first came to international attention at the age of 16 when he won his first Emmy Award. Last time he was here, we talked about his blockbuster hit movie, Gridiron Gang, and his more recent movies, including My Trip Back to the Dark Side, Mistrust, The Untold Story, and Break Even. We also discussed his superb book entitled What You Don't Learn in Film School, A Complete Guide to Independent Filmmaking, which I said then, and I'm telling you again now, is a must read for anyone who aspires to achieve success in any field. Today, we're here to talk about our guest's much anticipated brand new movie entitled Double Threat. It's a highly entertaining action comedy thriller about a vivacious young woman with a split personality who has ruthless mobsters on her tail and who becomes entangled with a mild-mannered man on a sentimental cross-country journey. Here's the trailer. Take a look.
Hi, Natasha. What are you doing tonight?
Working.
Get down!
Whoa. Okay. Dark green, late 90s burb, headed west with a feisty little brat.
Go, go, go!
Jeez. Nobody sends a dead squad to rob a cashier. You're not telling me the truth.
Okay, fine. The store was a cover.
A cover for a crime family I was working for.
You know, helping distribute money. And maybe skimming some off the top.
You were stealing from those guys?
Son, I need you to get this job done.
I am getting it done, Dad.
Whatever you feel for this Natasha girl, you're gonna have to hunt her down and kill her yourself.
Natasha! I thought you loved me!
Well, boys.
So, more chaos.
You know me too well.
Aggression the only solution for you?
Yeah.
Double Threat will be available on most streaming services starting on June the 3rd. I'm delighted to welcome back to our show the director of Double Threat and my very dear friend, Shane Stanley. Shane, thank you so much for being here.
Harvey, thank you for having me. It's an honor. How are you?
I'm fine, and I'm even better having you here.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor. It is so good to see you again. I've missed you.
I've missed you too. Shane, the last time you were on our show, your latest film was Break Even, which had not yet been released, but now it's available on demand and on DVD, correct?
Yes. Yes, it's everywhere. You could get it still on most platforms. I believe the DVDs are still available at Walmart, Best Buy, Amazon. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That was a fun film, and we're really proud of it.
For those of you who haven't yet seen Break Even, it's another fast-paced action film about four adventurous friends who find $50 million in cash while exploring a remote island, only to learn that the money was planted by the DEA for the cartel in a rogue deal. That movie really kept me on the edge of my seat, and you got to direct a veteran actor, Steve Guttenberg. What was that like?
That was a lot of fun. You know, how do you not love Steve Guttenberg? I mean, as a kid growing up in the 80s, obviously with Police Academy and Three Men and a Baby and all of his great films that he did, Cocoon. And I had actually met him at Casa Vega, which is where they filmed that famous scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I was there one night in the early 90s and he was there and our paths crossed. And it was I met him and he was so kind. And I remember thinking, God, to work with him someday would be so cool. And then fast forward, you know, 25, 30 years later, to be able to work with Steve was such an honor. And we've stayed friends. He and his wife, Emily, are just wonderful human beings. I hope to get the chance to work with him again. He's just great.
You know, I'm interested in the reference to the word kind and kindness, because you told me when we first met that in your experience in Hollywood, the greater the star, the greater the talent, the kinder they are. And I have found the same thing, that the people that were real legends are actually the nicest.
They really are. I mean, you know, we've talked about somebody like Jane Seymour. You know, I've had the pleasure of working with Dwayne Johnson. It just seems in most cases, the bigger they are, the kinder they are. And, you know, there are the exceptions that unfortunately are not, but it's something that I would love young Hollywood and a lot of the people that are on the fringe of being at that level really remember as part of their day-to-day and how they conduct themselves, because, you know, fame is fleeting and kindness is something that I think goes such a long way. And you know, when it comes down to making films, when we decide on casting, a big part of it is who do we want to spend 16 hours a day with for the next 3 months, 2 months? And do we want to wake up first thing in the morning after a hard week and see and deal with this person or not? And it really does have a lot to do with how we cast, even on the smaller roles. You know, is this somebody that we want to bring into our little family and deal with? And they're the way they conduct themselves is it goes a long way for us.
It sure does. Your last few movies, Break Even, Double Threat, and Night Train, which hasn't been released yet, were all written by CJ Wally. The two of you make a really great team. Tell us about that working relationship.
Working with CJ is a dream come true. You know, I don't know if I had the chance to talk about it last time, and I'll make it a brief story. I had gone through just grinding in this industry for so long and needed a break. And I had the pleasure of writing my book. It was well received, thanks to people like you who made sure people read it. It's become required curriculum in a lot of schools across the country and actually the world. And I had such fulfillment doing that, Harvey, that I got to the point where I said, you know, if I never make another movie again, I'm okay with that. I'm sure there's a lot of viewers who would agree, but you know, I honestly felt like I had checked my career boxes, and I felt very blessed and fortunate to have had the career I had. And I was okay moving into a teaching phase of my life and trying to help the next generation of storytellers. And I was working with somebody who said to me, you need to get in touch with CJ Wally. He runs Script Revolution out of the UK. It's the biggest script hosting platform in the world, and he should read your book, and you two should meet. You're of like mind. And I reached out to him, and he got back to me, and I sent him the book and read, you know, in kind, read a script of his, and I remember saying, this is the kind of films I want to make. It reinvigorated me. It inspired me. I love making films about strong women and women that rise up and kick ass. And he knew how to do it. And I called him and I said, dude, let's make a movie together. And, you know, within a couple of months, Break Even materialized. And then we went right into Double Threat. And then we went right into Night Train. And we have a lot more that we want to do together. It's been an incredible partnership, but also an amazing friendship. We're just so like-minded. He's a true blessing in my life.
Well, it's a true blessing for the viewers because, I mean, look at the masterpieces you're producing.
Oh,
now, let's talk about Double Threat. Okay. Although CJ Wally wrote the screenplay, I understand the story was inspired by an incident you witnessed at a convenience store in Mexico. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's true. My father and I did a drive down to Mexico. It was about a 1,600-mile round-trip drive we did about 4 years ago. He was directing a project with Amy Johnson called Paloma's Flight that we were doing in Mexico. So my dad and I hadn't taken a road trip together forever. So we said, let's drive. So we were on our way back, had a real successful scout and trip there, meeting with everybody. And we, you know, needed gas. We were hungry, figured we'd stop into this liquor mart in the middle of nowhere. And I remember we walked in and there was this woman working behind the counter. She was probably in her late 20s. One of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, you know, naturally beautiful. And you just got the feeling like she didn't belong there. It was like so out of place considering the clientele, the location, the circumstances. And I remember, you know, didn't say anything, got our stuff filled up with gas. We hit the road. And about 10 minutes later, I turned to my dad and I said, did that not seem right to you? And he said, you talk about the girl that works there? And I said, yeah. And he said, yeah, something's out of place there. And then so I started, you know, as storytellers do, we start thinking, oh, maybe she was planted by the cartel. Maybe she was planted by the FBI. You know, who knows? And I remember getting home and just jotting it down on a notepad, just saying, you know, precarious young woman working at liquor store in Mexico. And I always had this idea that that could spawn something, you know, an assassin thriller, something. And then when it came time to do another film that we did, I sent CJ the outline of the character, and he took the ball and made it something that I think is really entertaining and interesting, and added the whole aspect of her having, you know, a split personality where it's not just a girl who's planted and pretending to be undercover, but she's truly living with dissociative identity disorder, where when things are fine, she's normal. She's apple pie girl next door. But when the, you know what hits the fan, she turns into a lethal killer who has got unbelievable skills. And then we wanted to make it fun, so we turned it into satire. We made it into, you know, kind of really poking fun at the over-the-top female action that we're getting inundated with today. So we kind of mixed it all up together, and that's where it spawned. Yeah.
The star of Double Threat is the amazing Danielle C. Ryan, whom we all know from shows like The Little House on the Prairie miniseries and Ostentatious and Criminal Minds and Magnum P.I. She's got the perfect blend of sassy, sexy, comedic attitude and off-the-charts charisma. And man, oh man, she can do incredible fight scenes. She was fabulous in this film, wasn't she?
She was. And you know what was really cool is I connected with Doc Duhame, who is a very well-known stunt coordinator in the industry. Doc has worked with everybody from Steven Spielberg to Harrison Ford. He is the coordinator for Ray Donovan. And Doc is known for his violent fight scenes. And Doc and I have known each other since I was in diapers. And I said to Doc, I want you to come on board and do this. And he was a little apprehensive at first because he didn't know anything about Danny. He's known for violence. He had just come off Ray Donovan. He didn't want to sugarcoat what he had been doing. So I just said, just go spend a day with her and let me know what you think, Doc. So Doc called me about an hour into their hanging out at a park. I guess they wanted to kind of work out a few things. He called me, goes, I don't know where this girl's been hiding. Shane, I've never seen anything like it. And Danielle did all of her own stunts, refused any stunt doubles, anything like that. She took all the punches, threw all the kicks, rode a horse, shot a bow and arrow off it on full gallop and hit a moving target while we were shooting many times. She can do so much, but more importantly, she's a great actress. But the best part is we go back to kindness, one of the most kind-hearted, humble, sincere human beings I've ever met. And that's why we immediately wanted to work with her again. She's the star of Night Train.
I think Danielle has a huge future in this industry. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that she's starring in your next film, Night Train.
That's right.
Now, the male lead in Double Threat, who goes on the road trip with Danielle's character, is the wonderful Matthew Lawrence, who's been in so many movies and TV shows, including Mrs. Doubtfire, Dynasty, Give Me a Break, Brotherly Love, Boy Meets World, Hawaii 5-0, and so many more. The chemistry between Matthew Lawrence and Danielle C. Ryan is a big part of what makes the film work, in my opinion.
Their chemistry it was instantaneous. You know, Matthew plays a very straight-laced, you know, he plays a forensic accountant who just lost his brother in a tragic car accident, and he was estranged from his brother. And his brother's wish, I guess, you know, in his will was that my brother's going to take my ashes and scatter them where we went as kids on road trips. So he's just innocently taken 2 weeks off of work, going to drive across country and scatter his ashes. And at one of his stops at a liquor store, he encounters this young woman and everything kind of goes, you know, left of left. But their chemistry really, I think, resonates on screen. They had such great timing. There was a lot of times we just, you know, they stuck to the script, but we would just let them improvise and just let them go. I think you really feel it on screen. And it was a real, as a filmmaker, it was so nice to not to have to force anything, especially in the edit bay. Their chemistry was just awesome.
Does CJ Wally write his screenplays with specific actors in mind?
You know, I think as being a writer, I can tell you a lot of writers do. We had come to a point, we were looking at working with Danielle pre the pandemic, Harvey, on some things. So we had the pleasure of meeting her and kind of getting an idea of what she was about. So CJ and I, it was a really funny story, is when we did Double Threat, I made a decision, you know, after being indoors for 6 months in September of 2020, I said, you know, we can look in the rearview mirror and say 2020 kicked our butt, or we made it ours. And I refused to go down with 2020 winning. So let's do something. So CJ said, well, why don't we just get some money together and do a fun little action movie with Danielle? She's so good with the kicks and the acting, and we can do something. And I called her manager and said, hey, we're going to do something before the year is over. And he said, it's so funny, Danielle and I just had the same conversation about you guys. Let's talk. So we did a four-way Zoom call that afternoon, and CJ wrote the script in 6 days. So I think it's safe to say that he had Danielle in mind when he wrote it. And then when Donna Livieri came on board, her role was originally written for a man, and we sent her the script with it, and she signed on and loved it, and we rewrote it, and CJ studied her work. And so I think as a writer, and I'm sorry it took so long to get to your answer, I think as writers, we always like to think of a character and an actor playing a part. But when you have a situation where you know who your players are, it makes it a lot easier, because you can kind of plug in their dialect, their style, their charisma, their cadence, and put it in. And I know we did that for Night Train. We had Brent Bailey, who was in Break Even, played a really good role in Night Train. And once Brent said, hey, I'm available, I want to be a part of the film, CJ was able to go back and just rewrite his part for him. And it just felt so natural.
Are you the one who does the casting for your movies?
You know, I spearhead that. I work with, I like to involve CJ, especially because out of respect, you know, he and I are such like mind. We're in such lockstep, Harvey. When we did Night Train, for example, we cast the film in about 40 minutes. I just sat there with him and said, okay, who for this role, who for this role, who for that role? And then I would literally text the actors, whether it was Joe Lando or Danny or, you know, Brent, Joseph D. Reitman, who's another great actor. And I basically said, hey, we're going out to play. I'll send you a script. You available? I want you in it. And, you know, it was kind of a really cool collaboration. And that's how we do it. You know, we think of who do we want to spend 18 hours a day with for the next 2 months? That's first and foremost. And who's right for this role, and who do we know? And that's how we usually work.
When you're working with highly skilled and very experienced actors, how much direction do you give them in their performance?
Do you know, I consider myself very fortunate. You know, I think as a filmmaker who usually edits his own material and thinks of the big picture, not just the moment, I know what I don't need. So I'm able to really spearhead and steer the ship in making our days tight, getting the footage we need. I kind of go with that Sidney Lumet mentality, Harvey, of once you commit to an actor, you fall, you live and die on that, and you fall on that sword. And I build a trust with my actors. You know, we have a conversation about the character. We talk about the tempo, the tone of the film. And I've been really lucky to not have to really oversteer them. I really love working with actors that especially the ones that I know I can trust, because I know their craft, and it makes my job a lot easier. And I don't mean that in a lazy way. There's times where you need certain things adjusted or tweaked, but I don't like to micromanage my actors. I always say, hey, you know, I come, as you may or may not be able to tell, from a rock and roll background. My favorite bands were Van Halen, Aerosmith, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones. Those bands were successful because they plugged their amps in, they hit the power, and they performed. And I think filmmaking, for me anyway, should be the same. I don't like to overthink things going in. I like to just let the talent and the artist bring to the table what they're going to bring at that moment. And I always feel confident knowing that we've bagged what we need to bag, and I'll make it work. Sometimes we're very successful with that. Sometimes I can walk away from it and say, I wish I had done some things differently, but we learn from every experience. But I love the mindset of just plug in and play. Let's go.
Now, as you mentioned, Double Threat was filmed during the pandemic. The script was written in less than 6 days. There were COVID shutdowns happening everywhere. Your financing was limited and you had no stunt doubles. Shane, how in the world did you manage to get this film made and with such high quality production values?
Well, thank you. It took a team. It was being limited. You know, I think we were told we couldn't have more than 20 bodies on a set. That included cast and crew. So we basically wrote a cast of five. We have, you know, Danny and Matthew, and then we had Don Olivieri and Kevin Joy, and then Mo Gallini came in and did a day in a couple scenes isolated. And we never really had the four of them together until the end. It was a road trip show, and that was done intentionally. We knew we couldn't be in a car. You know, you have to shoot green screen because you can't put two actors, a director, two camera, two ACs, and a sound guy in a car because of the pandemic. So we had to do a lot of things I wasn't used to, which was green screening. But we couldn't have done it without friends. You know, Galp and Ford provided vehicles for us. Mike C. Ryan had the film ranch and Jimmy Valdez had the sister property. The two of them heard we were making a movie and just basically said, the place is yours. Everything's shut down. Come up here, make your movie. Get out of Dodge and just come up here and do it. We tested three times a week. We did everything by protocol. We took over 400 tests. Not one came positive. Canon cameras provided us the cameras and lenses. We basically begged, borrowed, and stealed from every contact we had to do it because we basically did this entire film for what lot less than most independent films make, you know, an entire movie and just their craft service or catering bill. We did this really, really on a shoestring.
Well, the movie comes across like a really high budget film. I understand you're getting quite the reputation in Hollywood, Shane, for being able to create great looking movies on a shoestring budget. What's the secret?
Well, thank you. The secret is simple. Put the money on the screen. Don't put it where it doesn't matter. Again, it goes back to relationships. You and I have talked about this in the past I think nurturing relationships, especially in this business and in every aspect of life, is so important. Don't just call people when you need something. You know, we stayed in touch with so many of our friends and vendors during this COVID shutdown to make sure they were okay, because we weren't planning on making a movie, but human well-being came first. And when I was able to circle back and reach out to people and say, hey, we're going to go for it. We're going to try to make a movie. A lot of them were basically like, what do you need? Tell us what you need. It's yours. And we were really fortunate. And I try to implement that in everything I do. I know we did it in Night Train. We did it in Break Even. We did it in everything I do. When you're an independent filmmaker working with limited budgets, you don't have money to just throw at things. You can't throw it at problems. You can't throw it at perk packages. You can't throw it at a lot of things that a lot of the bigger films do. And it's nice to be able to just realize that every dime counts. I try to turn every dime into a dollar. And, you know, it just goes back to relationships and having people in your corner that believe in what you're doing and want to be a part of it.
When we had legendary director Jerry London on our show, he said he was able to produce great movies on shoestring budgets by mapping out the film so thoroughly beforehand that he never shot any unnecessary footage. So he always brought his movies in on time and often under budget. What do you think of that approach?
I think it's key. You know, as I talk about in my book that you were kind enough to mention earlier, I have a whole chapter on just pre-production and when you make independent films on how you have to be overprepared. You know, I've visited 100 sets over the years, and it seems that when the littlest thing goes wrong and the wheels come off the wagon, everything becomes an insurmountable problem. And I always load the pre-production period, Harvey, because that's when the hardest work is done. I like a good 3 to 4 months to prepare for a film. I like to think of a plan A, B, and C. And that way it's like when we did Double Threat, we had 9 locations taken from us the week that we needed them. And, you know, in that 20-day shooting period, we lost 9 of them in the middle of the shoot because of the shutdown, the second shutdown. And it was like a 20-minute discussion, get CJ on the phone. He was stuck in London because he couldn't have the travel ban. So I put CJ, Matthew, and Danny on a phone and just walked out and said, I trust you guys, make it work. And they reworked probably 4 or 5 scenes. And I just said, all right, let's, you know, we lost this store. We lost this cliff. We lost this place. Let's just, you know, the show goes on. And his mindset is right on. You have to be overprepared regardless of budget. I don't go in with a shot list. I don't go in with any preconceived notion of how something's going to be shot. I like to feel my actors. I have such a trust with our DP, Joel Loyogan, who I've worked with. We don't even talk. We just know exactly what we need to do. And we move through our day. But I coming from 30 years as an editor, I don't shoot unnecessarily. That's the last thing I do.
Well, it's interesting you just said that, because the other star of your movie, Double Threat, is the editing. The editing is really, really superb and keeps you at the edge of your seat all the time. How involved are you in that editing? Do you do it all?
You know, what's funny is on Double Threat, it was the first time that I actually worked with another editor, Frank Reynolds, who I have to take a second and thank not only for his incredible contribution to the film. Frank's resume, you know, he cut a little film called In the Bedroom, which was nominated for a Best Picture Award. And Frank knew Adam Kane, who was a dear friend of mine who endorsed my book and produced Break Even with me. Frank is a New York indie guy. And he reached out and said, hey, it's the pandemic. Adam speaks highly of you. I'd love to meet you. I'd like to meet some indie rats from LA as opposed to New York. And Frank got involved, and I had about 40 minutes of the film assembled. And I said, thank God, take it. I'm too close to this thing. Take it. And he would send me scenes. He worked for New York and he would send me scenes. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, and it was nice to see, you know, you finally see the forest through the trees. You know, I'm a very myopic filmmaker. You know, if I create an idea or I, you know, direct it, produce it, and then I cut it. Night Train, I cut every frame of. Break Even, I cut every frame of. But Frank was such a huge, huge part of cutting Double Threat. I am so grateful and to him, and plan to work with him again. I'd love to not have to cut my films.
Wow, you got yourself a superstar editor, because the pacing is totally dependent on that editing, and it really makes the movie sizzle. Now, I want to ask you, Shane, about movie trailers. In my opinion, this is just my opinion, so many of them give way too much away, and they leave me feeling like I don't need to see the movie because I just got the gist of it from the trailer. But your trailers do not do that. I've seen the trailer for your next film, Night Train, and it creates real interest and anticipation in the viewer, and it makes us hungry for more. Do you create your own trailers?
I work with a great guy by the name of Gil Carlson. And Gil, you know, he basically sets the tone. He'll work with a sales agent or distributor and say, here's the context. Here's what they need. And then I let him do it. And he does such a great job. He's so good at what he does. And because I know the footage, you know, Gil cuts probably 40 trailers, 50 trailers a year. I make two movies a year. So I know every frame of the footage that I have, and more so, I know all the frames of the footage that didn't make it in the film, ulterior takes, extra footage on a shot. You know, he could be looking at a scene that cuts at a certain spot, but I could say, oh, dude, I've got another 3 seconds on this. This would work in a trailer. So once he builds the skeleton, I'm able to say to him, hey, okay, what do you think about this footage? I could throw him a lot of other footage, or he'll send it back to me and say, my work here is done. You know, the footage you want to pepper in, go for it. And I'll just grab footage that often is not seen in the film, or something that's an alternative take, just to also, like what you said, I like to keep the film a little on the fresh side. I don't want people to feel like I've seen it once they've seen the trailer. So that way they can be watching a scene that may have been highlighted in a trailer, but they're seeing it in a different way, so it feels fresh subconsciously. So I like to be involved in the trailers, is at least for the footage. Let me help bring you some fresh views that is going to be selling the film as we need it to sell and advertise it, but they're going to feel like it's the first time they've seen it once they watch the movie.
Well, I'm really thankful that you allowed us to show the trailer for Double Threat in this interview. Like I mentioned, I've seen the trailer for Night Train, which hasn't been released yet, but I can't resist the opportunity to ask you about it because I'm excited to see that it's written by CJ Wally. It also stars Danielle C. Ryan. And I understand the film got a lot of buzz at the Cannes Film Festival. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, that one is very special to all of us. They all are. I mean, making a film is like having children. You love them all. You don't have favorites. But, you know, each one involves so much of an investment of time and energy and art and passion. Night Train is special. It's a story that You know, it's about a single mom with a child who's suffering from cystic fibrosis. And I lost two friends to that horrible disease when I was growing up. Danielle has a family member who's living with it, struggling with it. So CJ wanted to craft that aspect into kind of a heist movie, you know, something where a single mom who's trying to make it, you know, a lot of people don't know cystic fibrosis, even if you have great insurance, is still very costly to a family. So can you imagine being a single parent who's living in a gig economy, trying to make ends meet? How do you afford the meds to keep your child alive? So our character is basically has a connection for some black market medical supplies that keeps her son alive. And what happens is the FBI goes in and they shut down her lifeline. And her child's life's on the line, and she steps up and says, "Look, I will get your meds to where they need to go. Just promise me I'll have my supply for my kid." And then the FBI turns their attention on her, and it becomes this, you know, this chase, you know, this race against time, keep the kid alive chase movie with a lot of things at stake. And it stars Danielle C. Ryan and Diora Baird. I'm really proud of that one. I'm very excited for that as well.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I hope you'll come back to talk about it when it's released.
Anytime, you know my number.
Now, Shane, you're not only a director and a producer, you've also written a lot of movies and TV shows. Are you planning to do more writing, or is it directing that's your major focus now?
You know, I started writing by accident, and I was very lucky to have people in my life like Charlie Sheen, who for some reason enjoyed writing with me, and then Solomon King, God rest him, who enjoyed writing with me, and my dad, who I worked with and sold a lot of projects with. I don't like writing. I like having written. But you know, when you work with somebody like CJ, who truly knows the craft of what's off the page, character development, story arc, five act structure, keeping it moving, does every scene matter? It's nice to step back and really appreciate the knowledge of the craft people like CJ have, where you can really just say, okay, I know he's going to deliver me something I'm excited about that I could sink my teeth into. I love directing, and it's not an egotistical thing at all for me, Harvey. I always tell film students and people that want to come visit a set, look, the thing you'll learn from watching me is what not to do. I know I've tweaked a lot of noses with some of the great actors I've worked with at first when we worked together, because my approach is different. My trust level is, as we talked about before, is so high in the actors that we bring. I don't micromanage them. And I've learned actors, a lot of them really love to be directed and managed and shaped. And, you know, cool. If that's what you're into, I'm not the guy to work with, I promise. Because if you're coming on my set, you're there because I know you know your craft and I trust you. I love the collaboration. I think the part that I love most about directing is seeing it on the page, putting the right actor in the role, trusting that actor, trusting the cinematographer, trusting the locations, the story, and can't wait to get in the edit bay and put it together. To me, that's the prize, is getting in the edit bay and making it work. So my passion for directing is not sitting in a chair and yelling action and cut. It's more about watching all the elements we work so hard to put together come together. And the, you know, the work, as I said earlier, is in pre-production, but in post, in the edit bay, that's where it all comes to life for me. I love producing. I selfishly can say producing is what comes naturally to me. I've been doing it since such a young age, and you know, I've been producing for almost 40 years. That's one thing that I can do. It doesn't take a lot out of me. It doesn't push me as much as it does. And I like being pushed. I like being stretched. I like being uncomfortable. Producing doesn't do that for me, but I do it because I know how to put stuff together, especially on a dime, and get good people in front of and behind the camera. But the directing every day is such a learning experience. You know, I tell people I make 100 mistakes a day directing a movie. I make 100 a day. But the cool thing is I don't repeat those mistakes. So I learn every day, and I love learning. I love learning.
Well, and it really shows. I have only one more question for you, Shane. Are you having the career that you envisioned for yourself when you were starting out in this industry?
Absolutely not. And that's what I tell so many of the students I mentor or get to talk to at the universities. I say, you know, I promise you, your career will not go as you plan it. I didn't have a plan. I knew I didn't ever want to direct. I hated editing. I didn't know how to write. I knew how to produce. I knew young that I could produce. And I always just thought, okay, I'll just produce movies and this will be easy. And I'll be the next Jerry Bruckheimer by the time I'm 20 years old. And it doesn't work that way. And I fell in love with directing. And I have to credit a good friend of mine, Brett Michaels, the singer from Poison. Brett, when he first went solo in his career, he said to me, get a camera and direct a music video for me. And I was scared to death. I'd never directed anything. And we ended up shooting and doing a video together for a song that became very successful. The video was very well received commercially and, within the peers of the music industry. And it really changed my life. And I realized that I had so much fun because it was nice to go into the edit bay and know the footage that I had instead of editing something that I didn't control and trying to fix problems. And again, as I said, I make 100 mistakes a day on the set. I never get myself in the edit bay and say, what do? I painted myself into a corner. So my career constantly evolved. It went from just wanting to produce to getting into editing to actually pay the bills, but learning the craft over the course of, 10, 15, 20 years, and then being asked to direct something and then falling in love with not only doing that, but also being able to go into the edit bay without those surprises. And then it was like, well, everything just kind of changes, it's this constant change and evolving in my career. I don't know what's left for me to do. I've done everything that is on a call sheet as far as a job. I've shot, I've been a camera assistant, a dolly grip. I've cleaned the toilets. I've, been a writer. I'm very comfortable where I am right now. I'm happy. I love producing and directing, and I still love to cut, but I'd love to not do it so much. It's time consuming.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Doing another interview with you. I mean, come on. I mean, where else would I want to be, Harvey?
Well, you're always welcome. I mean, your movies are so enjoyable. They are the absolute definition of escapism. I'm incredibly proud of all your success. I feel like a proud uncle, and I know the best is yet to come. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear on our show. I hope you know you are welcome here anytime, my friend.
Thank you. That means the world. And Harvey, I do need to take a minute because, you are a friend, and I need to, you, as you and I have talked about, I, besides loving you as a human being, I love doing interviews with you because you come so prepared. And, the rumor is getting out, Paul Williams, who you've had on your show, is my surrogate uncle, Uncle Paulie, and you had him on your show. And it was so wonderful talking to Paul because everybody I talk to who's done your show, the takeaway is always the same, is there is nobody more prepared and more well-read and kind. And you have no idea what you have going on here with your show. And I wanted to take a minute. You always shed light on us. You are a true artist, a true sweetheart, and an incredible human being. And thank you for being who you are, which makes doing this so much fun.
Well, Shane, there are no words to tell you what that means to me. I'm very moved and incredibly humbled and eternally grateful. Thank you again for doing this interview for us.
Anytime. Bless you, my friend. Stay safe, and we'll see you soon.
Our guest has been the wonderful writer, producer, director, and author, Shane Stanley. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you to our producer, Steve Silver. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.